So every Sunday I'm in that school and I'm being taught about being a Jew, and I'm looking at Jesus and I'm looking at statues of Mary and Joseph and Jesus. And I'm like, what is this? And
no, wait a second. You mean Saturday, don't you?
No, we went to Sunday school.
On Sunday.
As a Jew. As a Jew, yes.
That's confusing because usually the Sabbath is the Saturday.
No, the Sabbath is, you don't do anything on the Sabbath. You sure don't go to school on the Sabbath. You can't even turn a light on the Sabbath. You can't cook. You can't even brush your hair. So no, you don't do anything.
It's funny how it's strange how men make laws. For instance, you were not, as a Jew, you're not allowed to leave your own land, your home, on the Sabbath. But in Israel, they would take their pockets and they would fill them with the pebbles from their land. And then they would go into town by throwing a pebble and stepping on it, throwing a pebble and stepping on it. And it's like, you think you're going to fool God or something with this technicality?
That's right.
When Jesus came, he said, no. Love subjugates all these other laws.
And I started to learn this and I thought it was so great. I mean, you write about the Orthodox women. You know why they all wear wigs?
Yeah, why?
Can't do their hair on the Sabbath. They wear permanent eyeliner and makeup because you can't put it on during the Sabbath. Seriously, all these hacks, you got your lights on a timer, so you don't have to turn the lights on. You got, I mean, some people had, a servant or something doing things for them because they're not Jewish.
This can happen to anybody, because I can remember when I moved to Florida in my 30s, if I missed Sunday evening church service, it was at an Assembly of God church, I literally would feel that I was unpleasing to God. I'd gotten so caught up that I had to go Sunday morning, Sunday night, I had to go Wednesday night to the Bible study, Thursday night for this, blah, blah, blah. I was kind of, I literally, as an adult male, felt that I was displeasing to God if I didn't know all this stuff. And the one thing the Lord doesn't want us to do is get bound up. Yes, we should not forsake the gathering together, but he doesn't want us to be encumbered. Again, even Paul spoke of that, who'd been an extreme Jew. This guy was a Pharisee, so he knew all the laws. When he said, don't go backwards and be encumbered by thinking you're going to get salvation by the laws. It's the free gift of God. You can't earn it. Very important.
It is, and I've had such a close relationship with God my entire life. I have this letter that I've kept ever since I was a little kid. And I don't know when I wrote this. I mean, again, maybe 10 or 11 years old, my awakening of the age of 10. And it's a letter to God. And it was like, dear God, I need to know if you're real or something. I had some questions. And at the end, one of the things I wrote was, and is that stuff about Jesus real? And now I know it is, and it always was, and it's so freeing for me. And it's taken me since 2018. It's taken me many years even to embrace it for myself and to talk about it out loud. You know, it's been a process for me. But the more that I learn and I read the scriptures and I learn about him, and he's my husband and my father. And
well, let me ask you this. So later on in life, in my late 20s, I'm adopted by this living God. I was not born to Judaism, but I'm engrafted in branches into a tree. Now, you've written this book, Do You Think About Me on My Birthday? So if anybody appreciates the fact that somebody did come in and they wanted you, they chose you, what would you like us to know about your book, Do You Think About Me on My Birthday?
So my book is a message to everybody about being chosen and about being so loved by God and about being a child and coming of age and having all these questions and being thrown into this turmoil. You know, you grow up and you never think that anything like this can happen. You're adopted. You don't think that parents are going to come looking for you. I mean, that's crazy. But to me, I'm glad that it happened. I know I don't sound like I like my biological father very much. And I don't appreciate the way that he conducted himself. He could have done things a lot differently and made things a lot easier on me. And he never made it easy on me. He always made it so that I had to make choices and I had to choose loyalties and things like that. But this book is I think it's important for one. It's also a really fun book. I got to say that. It's not a very serious book like it sounds like it probably would be, but it's really a very lighthearted beach read. And I want you to feel like you're going to the beach because a big part of the book takes place at the beach and is about myself. And I use a different name, actually. The name that I chose for the protagonist of my book is Leah. And Leah is my Hebrew name. So that's why I chose that book. So anyway, I mean that name for the book.
What does Leah mean?
So Leah is a biblical name. And Leah was a sister with Rachel. And Leah and Rachel fought over this man, Isaac. I believe it was Isaac. Is it Isaac? I forget, but it's funny because my best friend, her Hebrew name is Rachel. We just laughed. But Leah had children and Rachel was barren. But Isaac loved Rachel the most, you know. So it's this big story. So my full Hebrew name is Leah Esther, another wonderful biblical name that I get shivers about. I almost called the name in the book would be Esther, but I chose Leah because it just kind of rolls off a little bit easier than Esther does. But anyway, everything in my book is very tied to God. And it's a book that I want people to take a journey back into the 80s because it's set in the 80s. And one of the ways that I write is very visual. I want you to see the scenes. I want you to get to know the people. So I'm pretty detailed. The book reads kind of like a movie in a lot of ways. It takes the reader on a journey through the 80s, which I think is really fun. I break into song a lot.
Was it cathartic? Is that the right word, cathartic for you?
Unbelievably cathartic. And I've been writing this book my whole life, basically. That's why this is only the first book, because there are literal, like, I had to winnow this down from like 1,000 pages, and it's 365 pages or 364, something like that. I really had to pick and choose and take a lot of stuff out of it. But what I left in it is what I hope the reader will enjoy being on the journey of going back into the 80s. So in a lot of ways, this book is a time capsule. It's back in a time we didn't have cell phones and life was a lot different. We, you know, had to call people, we had to see people, and spending time at the beach is timeless and I think is always healing for anybody. But in this book, I go through a lot of ups and downs. So it's a coming of age book as well. Leah loses her virginity in the book. So there's that too. And I also grappled with that scene. And of the people who read it before I published it, they said that it is an important scene because it is the way that a lot of girls feel and think when they lose their virginity. And the other thing about my book is that it's set in the 80s, which is about 10 years after Roe versus Wade. And not to get political there, but when it comes to life and babies, I'm a pro-life advocate. And I cannot be anything else because I have the baby's point of view. And I learned that from this book. This book is about a child and about a child who is growing up in a world where I was wanted and chosen, and now babies are not being wanted and chosen, you know, the alternative. And I don't even want to speak about it, but that also happens in my book.
Well, it almost seems like all this killing of babies, how can, you know, anyway, you can't tell me what I want to do with my body. It's the PRID. And what's one of the seven abominable sins, the you know, one of them is pride, and they name themselves pride. I mean, why do you want to push? You want your freedom to do with your body what you want to do. Well, I have the freedom to pick up a gun today and go shoot somebody too, but there's going to be a consequence.
And that's the thing. You have the freedom also to drink 10 beers and get in your car, just like you have the freedom to have sex with somebody. It's all, you know, you have these choices. You don't just get pregnant unless the Lord wants you to. Don't get pregnant, you know, for no reason. And then people throw in incest and rape and all this stuff. Well, you know, even then, I know a little boy who was a product of rape. His mother was raped when she was 13 years old, and her mother didn't realize that she was pregnant until it was well along. And the baby was born, and the grandmother ended up adopting the baby. They raised him. He's the best one of the whole family. He's a wonderful joy of a child. He's a young man now, actually. So I don't like that, putting the sins of the father onto the child. I mean, I am that baby. And those are my brothers and sisters, all of the babies that are now being seen as choices instead of gifts from God, which is what they actually are.
My grandmother, my father was in law school. They'd already had my brother, and my father's mother suggested to my mother that they abort me.
And you see, have you ever met anybody who thought about aborting their child who was sorry that they didn't do that? I mean, but you know, a lot of people who did abort and then lived their whole lives with guilt and with pain and thinking about them on the birthday that never happened. I had a friend of mine who, she didn't have any abortions, but she knows she had her son out of wedlock, and it was really hard for her. And she said to me, "Do you have any compassion for those people who have to make a choice and you know, they find themselves pregnant at a bad time? Do you have compassion for them?" And I said, "I could have compassion for them, but I actually can't because."